maybe for Hard Knocks tonight? Are you excited about it? What's your view on that?
Obviously.
You sleep
in
at 10 o'clock? What time
do
you go to bed?
Just depends.
That was Tyrod Taylor during Hard Knocks. John, I want Tyrod Taylor to be the backup quarterback of the Texans in 2019.
I think that would be great, but I would imagine that he's going to try to go somewhere where he at least has a chance to play, which he would not have here. Brandon Weeden, of course, hadn't thrown a pass since 2015.
Oh, wow.
I'd like to see RG3 here for obvious reasons, sick him. And he has said he wants to stay up there backing up Lamar Jackson because we all think Joe Flacco's gone from Baltimore. And I think he would fit in well here. They said he did a great job working with Jackson. But Taylor, you know, did he sign a one-year deal? Do they keep him in the backup? Does he have a good relationship there with Kitchens and Mayfield? So I don't think they're going to be quick to get rid of him unless he did sign a one-year deal.
The thing I wonder about is, if you're a quarterback, I mean, obviously Tyrod Taylor would love a starting job. I just think that in the game of musical chairs, a quarterback this offseason, I don't think he'll be getting a chair. I think he'll be one of the guys left standing. So if you're a guy who wants to play and wants to start, but you are in a situation where you can only settle for a backup quarterback job, what is the thought process of backing up Deshaun Watson as compared to backing up other guys?
Well, it depends on if the other guys have played 16 games, and I think Watson showed last year when he played with a collapsed lung and the Bruce Sternum and the broken rib, it's hard to get him out of the lineup. He was out for one play when he thought the half was over. And if I'm Taylor and I'm looking around the league, maybe he wants to go to Miami unless they bring in a new quarterback, which they're supposed to do.
Right.
Maybe he goes – I came off the top of my head. There's a lot of situations
the Giants
where
might draft a quarterback,
if they don't, that's the place I want to go. Not so much Eli, who's been durable, but a chance where I would get at least to throw some balls to prove that I'm still accurate. You know, Teddy Bridgewater got a chance this year, and the last one he didn't do well, and he's unrestricted.
Yep.
But you're not hearing about him like you are Nick Foles and even Joe Flacco, who are both going to be available.
Miami's interesting because Miami might very well draft a quarterback. But I wonder if the success of Pat Mahomes after sitting out almost the entire first season helps somebody like Tyrod Taylor, in that maybe teams will be a little bit more committed to sitting guys for the entire season if there's a guy like an Alex Smith playing in front of him. So now, like, Alex Smith is a better quarterback than Tyrod Taylor. But if they can win games and be competitive and they genuinely, with the Dolphins, draft some guy that they want to sit, maybe that actually happens. So Tyrod, at the very least, if I'm Tyrod Taylor and the Dolphins draft a quarterback, I'm thinking, you know what? I've got a really good chance of playing at least 8 games here. And maybe that rookie will play eventually. Maybe 4 games I'll play. But that's where I'll go. So, I'm with you, John. I think no matter what the money is, there's going to be an opportunity out there for somebody either with either a dicey situation, a quarterback, or a team that's going to draft a quarterback where you'd still get playing time.
Most
sign
guys
a one-year deal.
Don't admit, okay, I am a backup and nothing else. They still want a chance to play. Like when Taylor went to Cleveland and Hugh Jackson told him, you're my guy, you know, you're going to start the first year. They all say that, and it's difficult. If Andy Reid had not had Alex Smith and they had not been a playoff team, it would have been a lot more tempting to play Mahomes. I don't think it was because Mahomes couldn't do it. I think it was more of the chance Andy Reid was hoping to go to a Super Bowl with Smith.
Yeah.
Wade Smith has thrown out on our show for the sake of conversation, would you trade Jadeveon Clowney for Antonio Brown? Obviously, there are a lot of logistics, and I wouldn't do the deal because I'm happy relatively with the receiving core. If and when the Texans tag Clowney, which you have told us is the thing that's going to happen, do you believe there is any price tag another team could entice the Texans to trade him?
Well, first of all, teams wouldn't do that because he's not a premier pass rusher. You know, he's a good pass rusher. He's great against the run, and which is one reason he's not going to get paid like Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald, who every year are double-digit sack guys. And trading him for Antonio Brown, no way. There's no way I would do that. There's two guys that are disruptive on this defense, White and Clowney, and that's it. And if you can neutralize them with double teams or great blocking, they don't have anybody else get the quarterback. I think after offensive tackle and cornerback, which are going to get a lot of attention at the top of the draft and in free agency, I think they need another pass rusher. You know, you thought it was going to be Whitney Merciless.
Well, don't they have one who it seems like they're not using to his capabilities?
Who?
Whitney. I mean, John, Whitney played 39 snaps in the playoff game against Indy.
Well, that's because of Romeo Crennel. If Romeo, I'm not going to say Romeo's not using him right, because I think Romeo knows what he's doing.
Well, I don't think he's using him right.
But, okay, Mike, I guess the question is, though, he's not being used to the best of his abilities, but the question is exactly for what reasons. I think there are reasons that he isn't. Like, they're asking him to be a jack of all trades,
yes.
Partly because there's a little bit of a log jam in where their outside pass rushers are. So, like, if you have Whitney just line up on the outside as a defensive end / outside linebacker every single down, then that's going to mean either Clowney or J.J. Watt is going to do less of that, too. So, is that a matter of it? Like, is it Romeo's fault for doing that? Or, like, what's the best thing? What do you want? You just want to move J.J. inside more so he can get injured again?
Well, here's the thing.
A lot of times,
well, you can trade him.
Clowney's inside standing up,
yeah.
And you need a guy opposite him to rush, and Whitney's out there, and he's not getting the pressure he used to get. He had 14 pressures, or he had 14 hits on the quarterback and 4 sacks, and you need more. You need somebody that's up in the 6, 7, 8, at least. Whether he gets a sack or not is at least putting pressure on the quarterback, and I think that is probably, in my mind, their third need after the first two. Not as glaring. But still a need.
So are we talking like an interior pass rusher, a guy you can plug in on the inside?
I don't care where he comes from.
They were working out, I can't remember the name of the kid at the East-West game. They talked to a kid that's kind of a three-down defensive tackle. Because none of their defensive tackles right now are genuine, like Aaron Donald's an extreme example. You're not going to get an Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
But just more of a combo pass rusher run stuffer. Right now you have a sense that a lot of those guys are guys that are good versus the run and can rush the passer, but that's not what their major is.
In passing situations, a lot of time Watt was the only lineman they had on the field. So if you have those guys with a lot of linebackers, if one of them was particularly good at because he was quick or had the moves or whatever, but could just put some pressure on the quarterback, because after the first two, you didn't have anybody.
The thing that's really disappointing is that the Texans in the last two games they played against Indy, they didn't touch Andrew Luck. Then I'm watching on Saturday, and Dee Ford and Justin Houston and Chris Jones are all over the place against Andrew Luck.
Yeah,
they didn't play. The Colts came out in that game like the Texans came out against the Colts, as flat as the prairie.
I wonder if next season they change their strategy somewhat and maybe try to go from it at like a wave standpoint. We've seen the Eagles sort of do that over the last couple seasons. Now, they just have so many different guys. But, I mean, shouldn't Duke Ejiofor, shouldn't Whitney Merciless be getting more opportunities to actually go after the passer? I mean, and I don't know that for this season with Ejiofor, I mean, how much were you really expecting out of a rookie? But he showed a lot in training camp. He showed a lot early in the season to show that maybe he's got some promise down the road.
He had the most hits on Luck in the playoff game.
Well, Duke, and a lot of times they're lining him up almost trying to do the same thing that Jadeveon does, which is a hard thing to do. It's become, since the Texans started doing it a couple years ago, just lining guys up, standing up all over the defensive line, it's lost a little bit of its effectiveness just because offenses are getting better at doing it. Or offenses are seeing it more, so they're getting better at figuring it out. With Whitney, what I would say is that there's something to be said for getting into a rhythm as a pass rusher. So he didn't have as many opportunities to get pressure on the quarterback this year. And when he did, it was after he was playing off the ball as a linebacker, then coming up. Like when you spend a whole game in the same spot or on the edge, you can set offensive tackles up. You can start to get a feel for what's going to work, what isn't going to work. So I think it's moving him around all over the place that limited him. It put more of him out as a guy in coverage, which that's not his forte, which also weakened his ability as a pass rusher. I'm not going to crush Crennel for it because I think it's more of a numbers crunch right now. And I could see where, I guess what you're just saying, Mike, is that potentially that's a trade option.
Potentially. Yeah. I also think that, I mean, this kind of dovetails with what Lombardi told us last Friday, which Michael Lombardi, he thinks that Watt and Clowney play too many snaps, and he thinks less of those guys means more.
Yeah.
Which I can also buy into.
There were some games where they were gassed at the end, though, where Watt had fewer than 50 snaps.
I guess we need to go back through all the games and figure out what percentage of the snaps that they're taking.
Yeah.
Time now for Matt Takes. According to LendingTree, single ladies in Houston are outpacing their male counterparts when it comes to home ownership. Single women in Houston own like 267,000 homes, While the number of homes owned by single men is 157,000, the gap between men and women in favor of women is 7.8%.
Men are spending all their money trying to find those women.
That may indeed be the case.
Seems like gaming, too. Seems like we like our gaming these days.
I've spent most of my money on alcohol.
Yeah.
Solid.
But aren't you using that alcohol to try to find women?
Well, maybe I am, but maybe I'm just using it to, I don't know, calm my sad soul. Listen, we all medicate ourselves in our own special way, and for me, it's $100 bar
yours
test.
The great thing about alcohol is that you get to medicate yourself and create more of the same problems that you need to medicate yourself against. It's just
it's a cycle.
Yourself in a cycle.
It was a brilliant business plan alcohol had back
especially
in the day.
Especially bars.
Like, some fruit was laying around and being like, you know what, nobody wants me as a piece of rotten fruit, but maybe if I turn myself into alcohol, people will never stop eating me. And that's what is happening. Good job, alcohol.
Is it wrong that if I met a woman who owned a house or a townhouse, I have no issue just moving into her place?
Good. You shouldn't if she invites you.
Yeah. Is that a bad strategy?
No.
Why would that be a bad strategy?
Some people aren't a fan of that sort of thing.
She can always boot you out.
That's she could.
Ridiculous.
I mean, who's not a fan of that strategy?
I've just heard that this is
like
not a good thing.
Macho man.
Yeah.
You could be a kept man.
I could be.
Jonesy's fiance has a house and he's moving into it. He's gonna he's a kept man.
There you go. That's a
great
spot.
He's a big old man bingo in there. He's like, there's nothing you can't. There's the thing about Jonesy is that he's being paid for his services. He gets a place
good
to
for
live
him.
Because he's a champion.
Well done.
The sex therapist who I was dating had a 3-story townhome, and I thought to myself, you know what? If I were asked to move in here, I could totally see myself being here.
It's a good spot.
Being the house boy.
A sex therapist. Business is good, huh?
Apparently.
A sex therapist.
No, that's what I thought.
What am I going to do to tell my wife? I go home today and be like, honey, you know what? I've decided to go back to school and get my doctorate. She'll be like, oh my gosh, wow, that's so impressive. What are you going to do? Sex therapist.
Shouldn't
that's
a
what I'm
sex therapist be under a lot of pressure during sex to be the greatest?
Unfortunately, I wouldn't know.
It's a lot easier for women to be the greatest than men.
That is unfortunate.
Though women, it's I don't think the bar is as high. That's why, as a sex therapist, you should always be a woman. As a guy, I'd feel a lot of pressure if I was a sex therapist.
Oh yeah,
you meet some woman, you're like, oh, I'm basically a sex expert.
Yeah. And then I'm having a sex god,
having to fake a light cramp 45 seconds into it because it's over. That'd be my sex therapy. Listen, guys, sometimes when the action's over a little sooner than you anticipated, fake a leg cramp.
I like it. How can they argue with it?
This is somewhat sportsy and has to do with a popular figure in our culture. Remember Tommy Lahren? Tommy Lahren, the hot taker of the internet that I don't really know what she does anymore.
No, she's like on a network.
Is she on
Fox
News?
Yeah, she's actually like big, kind of big time. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know she made it big. Well, apparently she is now dating former NBA star Richard Jefferson. They were together yesterday at a Boston Celtics game. Ooh. And Richard Jefferson was calling the game and he brought her on. You know what? I wonder what it would be like to date Tommy Lahren, because I don't know if people have seen some of the incidents that she has dealt with because of her hot takes. There's a person that like came up to her at a restaurant that she was having brunch at, just spilled like a giant drink of water on her.
Yeah.
I feel like she's one of those people where you would definitely be noticing a lot of, not necessarily like, hey, look, it's that person, celebrity. Oh, like controversial eyeballs.
I feel like this is going to be a complicated situation for Richard Jefferson. He's gonna have to deal with a whole bunch of stuff.
from all
sides on this.
Definitely.
You don't want the woman that you're dating or married to being attacked. And by virtue of dating someone who's a political analyst, you know they're going to be attacked.
I think Richard Jefferson's going to be attacked. Is what I'm saying. Yeah, like Richard Jefferson.
By proxy,
he's got to go to barbecues and stuff.
Yeah,
and
she's the hot take conservative guy. He's a black guy. That's not going to go over well. Imagine it bringing her over to the barbecue. Yeah. Is she going to have the same take she does in front of a teleprompter in front of these people?
Probably not.
She is the host of. She's on Fox Nation. Final Thoughts is her show. Final Thoughts.
Mike, I'm bringing this up just basically because of you and McClain. I feel like you guys are on top of this. This is news that, to me, is kind of out of the blue, because I'm reading that Bob Costas' legendary career at NBC is over. And my first question is, wasn't it already? When was the last time I saw Bob Costas do anything other than do a hatchet job on the ALDS? What is this about?
So
remember when he did the ALDS and it was basically like the only research he'd done on the Astros, you could tell, was what he read in the paper.
He called Luno.
It wasn't even like he had read the Chronicle. Like he had read some story in the New York Times about the Astros.
It was weird.
That was his research. It was awful.
So his contract was wrapping up, and now this is the official Bob Costas, who had a legendary career at NBC, done after 40 years.
It was, but I'll never forgive him for phoning it in. In the ALCS.
But I would point out that was not an NBC property. That was part of his MLB Network contract, which, if you're curious, is continuing into the future.
I miss Bob Costas's monologues during Sunday Night Football, where he always was wearing a scarf and glasses.
Those were fun.
I really liked feeling that
people
love
that.
Costas,
yeah.
Man of the people, talking to me about football.
His weekly Gillette commercial.
Exactly.
Costas,
yeah.
This is Bob Costas telling you how to live your life on a sports broadcast.
Now, my father, and we brought this up on the show a number of times when my dad has been on, has always hated Bob Costas because my dad only wants to watch sporting events to basically watch the games. He has no interest in the human interest stories they do at the Olympics.
Well, plus, you know why? Because he grew up in the Soviet Union.
Everyone is the same.
He recognizes it in Bob Costas. Like, he's like, this dude might as well be working for the Politburo or one of these other... What was the name of the newspaper over there?
Pravda.
Might as well be working for Pravda. This guy's a propaganda machine.
So Bob Costas and his tenure at NBC has come to an official conclusion.
So I can empathize with the girl in this story here to an extent. A teenage girl in Ohio, she called the police on her parents because she had her phone taken away from her. She claimed that her dad stole her phone and insisted it was theft and that she was entitled to the phone. But the officers explained to the girl that having a cell phone under the age of 18 is a privilege and not a right, as she believed. But I can empathize with this person because I once threatened to call the police on someone who had wronged me. Back in preschool at Lutheran Nursery School in Hanover, Massachusetts, there was once a piece of string on the ground. Mrs. Yanks went up to me very nicely and said, "Paul, I need you to pick up that piece of string." And I said, "No! I'm going to call the police! You can't make me do this!" And yes, I ended up going home early that day.
That's an aggressive
move.
When
I was in school, they would have beat the hell out of you.
The Lutheran Nursery School did not beat the hell out of you. I suppose they could have taken some Catholic measures and brought the rulers out, but they did not do that at that nursery school.
John, did they ever beat the hell out of you?
Oh, yeah.
What'd they beat you with? Their hands or a paddle?
Big old boards.
Did the board have holes in it?
Big old boards? Sometimes they had holes, sometimes they didn't.
Well, the holes make it worse, right? Because that decreases the wind resistance.
I've been over so many desks from teachers and principals and vice principals. I'm surprised. Well, I may still have it on there. I just never looked.
That really sucks. What age did they stop hitting you?
I got it through high school.
Through high school?
Wow, pretty late.
Middle school and high school, they were still beating us if we deserved it.
I don't think I ever got hit in school. I know when I was in North Carolina, they were allowed to hit you there, which got me. I feel like the threat of getting hit in school when I was in second grade carried through with me all the way through, like when I was in school where they weren't allowed to hit you. The residual fear of getting paddled was with me.
You're always thinking about it.
Made me a good student the whole time.
First time I got it in second grade on my top of my hand because I put a tack in a teacher's chair.
Oh, damn.
And a girl sitting next to me told on me.
Jeez.
Wow.
I had a friend. There was no spanking in my school, and now I'm having a flashback to when a friend of mine in wood shop in eighth grade carved out a male body part and then left it in the desk of a teacher that he didn't like.
His arm.
And now I'm thinking, wow, what's that? Yeah, it was a different. There's
a long arm.
It was a specifically male
a
body
leg.
Part.
Ah.
And really, it wasn't even like an extra credit assignment. He couldn't submit this for a grade. And he put in that woman's. And I remember thinking, like, this was my Gillette commercial moment.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, like, I was like an eighth grader saying, like, yeah, that'll learn her. She's mean. And then I saw her later. Like in the hallway, completely like emotionally rattled and shaken. And I was like, holy crap.
This is real
life. And then I felt really, really, really bad. Like, I still feel bad to this moment about it. That kid
like a Gillette ad for you.
That kid had a lot of issues, but he ended up being all right. Yeah.
John?
That was my Gillette ad moment. Well, no, in a Gillette ad, I would have like stepped in and been like, Jason, bro, what are you doing? Okay.
What are you doing, You're Jason? Not representing men properly.
But he didn't. That kid had a lot of issues at home. He ended up,
he was okay.
Himself straight, yeah.
That's good to hear. Yeah.
He's good to women, Gillette. Don't go after him.
John, we'll see you next week.
Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it as always.
John McClain in, brought to you by Horn Solutions.